Osarsif,
she whispered close behind him, and girded herself up to make a proposal.
Osarsif, my beloved, who are long since joined with me in a mystery, hearken and understand your Aeni aright. I could...
This was the moment which revealed why and to what end Mut M'Enet had bitten her tongue, and what were the long-since-ready words for which she had prepared it, that it might utter them in the most beguiling, helpless, and pathetic guise. Not only the words of the offer, that came first, but not last, for the final and actual ones, for which she had taught her tongue to lisp like a child, were meant for the proposal she now made, laying on his shoulder the lovely masterpiece that was her hand, blue-veined and decked with precious stones, and nestling her cheek to it, as she said, sweetly, with pouting lips,
"But I might kill him."
He started back. The prettiness of it was too much for him. He would never have thought of it, nor expected it of her, even after he had seen her lift her lioness paws and heard her hoarse breath.
"Frightful am I alone."
She nestled to him as he shrank away.
"We could kill him and put him out of the way. What if there to that, my falcon? It is nothing. Tabubu could brew me in a twinkling a clear decoction or crystalline deposit of mysterious powers. I would give it you in your hand to shake into the wine he drinks to warm his flesh. But when he drinks, he would grow cold by degrees, and no one perceive anything, thanks to the skill of the Negro lands in brewing such potions. And he embarks for the West and is out of the world, and can no longer stand in the way of our bliss. Let me only do this, beloved, and revolt not against so simple a measure. For is not his flesh dead already while he lives? Is it of any use but to flourish and increase to no end? How I hate his lazy flesh, since my love for you has lacerated my heart and made my own flesh to a vessel of love. I cannot say, I can only shriek it. So, sweet Osarsif, let us make him cold, for it is a little thing. Or is it something to you to knock down a fungus with a stick, some foul, tindery mushroom, or puffball? That is nothing to do away with such. But when he is in his grave, and the house empty of him, then are we free and alone, blissful vessels of love, unbound to consequences, and may embrace each other, fearless, mouth on mouth. For you are right, my divine boy, to say that he stands in the way of our joy, and we may do naught to him. You are right in your misgiving. But just therefore must you see that we must make him cold and send him out of the world, that the misgiving may be satisfied, and we do him no more harm in our embracing. Do you understand, my little one? Picture to yourself our raptures, and how it will be when the mushroom is struck down and put out of the way, and we are alone in the house, and you, in all your youth, are its master. You, the master, because I am the mistress, for he who sleeps with the mistress is the master, and we shall drink of bliss by night, and in the day rest beside each other on purple cushions, and breathe incense of nard, while garlanded girls and youths posture before us and play on their lutes, while we lie and dream of the night that was and the night that will be. For I will hand you the cup, where we shall drink from one and the same place, with our lips on its golden rim. And as we drink, our eyes will meet in the thought of the delight which we had the past night, and that which we plan for this night. And we put our feet together.
"Hearken now, Mut in the Valley of Desolation," said he, "for I must conjure you." That is an expression, but I mean it literally. I must conjure you in all truth, or rather the demon that speaks out of you and by whom you are clearly possessed, for so it must be. Little pity have you for your legend, I must say, for you give yourself the name of Mother of Sin for all future times. But remember that we are perhaps, yes, very likely, in a saga. Then pull yourself together, for I too, as you can see, must do the same against your urging of delights, though it is easier for me because of my horror at your mad proposal to murder Petipray, my master and your husband. That is a frightful thing. It lacks only that you tell me that we are together also in this secret, because you have imparted to me your thought, and that it is now mine. But it is my case and concern that it shall remain but a thought, and that we shall make no such history as that. Dear Moot, I have no liking to your proposal that we live here together thus in your house after we have done away with its master. When I think how I should live, in the house of murder, with you, as the slave to your love, and derive my mastership from that, I feel self-contempt. Shall I not wear a woman's garment from Byssus, and you command me every night for your lust? A master seduced to murder his father that he may sleep with his mother? For just so would it be with me. Potiphar, my lord, is to me like a father. Were I to live with you in the house of murder, it would be as though I lived with my mother. Therefore, dear good child, I conjure you, in all friendliness, console yourself, and incite me not to such an evil deed. Fool, fool and child, she answered in her ringing tones. How like a foolish boy you answer in your fear, which, as your mistress, in love, I must break down. With his mother each man sleeps. The woman is the mother of the world. Her son is her husband, and every man begets upon his mother. Do you not know? Must I teach you these simple things? Isis am I, the great mother, and wear the vulture hood, and you shall name me your name, sweet son, in the sacred sweetness of the begetting night. No, no, not so, he cried. It is not as you say. I must correct you. The father of the world is no mother's son, nor is he the lord by a lady's grace. To him I belong. Before him I walk, the son of my father, and once for all I tell you I will not so sin against God the Lord, to whom I belong, to shame my father and murder him, and pair with my mother like a shameless hippopotamus. Now, my child, I must go. Dear mistress, I beg your leave. I will not forsake you in your distraction. Surely not. I will console you with words, and speak to you kindly as I can, for that I owe you. But now must I take my leave, and go to look after my master's house. He left her. She cried after him, Do you think to escape me? Do you think we shall escape each other? I know already of your zealot God to whom you are sealed, and whose wreath you wear. But I fear no stranger God, and I will tear your wreath of whatever it is made, and give you to wear a wreath of ivy and vine for the mother feast of our love. Stay, beloved, stay, loveliest of the lovely. Stay, O Sarsif, stay. And she fell down and wept. He parted the curtains with his hands and went quickly out. But in their folds, as he thrust them to right and left, on each side was a dwarf, one named Dudu, the other little Shepsis Bess, for they had found themselves together, stealing up from either side to listen. They stood there, each with one hand on his knees, the other to his ear, eagerly listening, the first out of malice, the second trembling with fright. And each, ever and anon, shook his fist at the other, and gnashed his teeth, beckoning him to go away. Neither had stirred, though each had been no little hindrance to the other in hearing. Yet neither had left the field. And behind Joseph, emerging from the folds, they flew at each other with hisses, fists raised to their temples, choking with fury, deadly in their enmity, because they were like in kind, yet so different in nature. "What business have you got here?" panted Dudu, spouse of Jesset. "You hunchback! You mite! You empty little barleycorn! You must crawl hither to this crack, where I alone have a right and claim to be, and will not budge however much I sign to you to make yourself scarce.
you miller's thumb, you cod's head, you shotten herring. I will thrash you till you cannot stir a leg, you worm, you misbegotten crawling vermin. You must come sneaking and spying hither, you empty bladder, and stand guard for your master and crony, the pretty fizz, the bastard from the swamps, the scum he brought into the house to shame it, taking the upper hand, till it is a disgrace to the two lands, and on top of all, making a thing of the mistress. Oh, oh, you villain, you bully, you vile mischief-making devil,
piped the other, his little face flawed into a thousand wrinkles with rage, his ointment cone askew on his head.
Who is it here lurking and listening to the devilry which he himself has brewed with his billet-doux and is playing with fire, feasting his eyes at a crack on the torture and agony of the big folk, that they may be snared in destruction according to his shameless scheming? Who but you, you pouch-mouth, you moocher, you scullion? Oh, you scarecrow, you jumping-jack, you bus-snacker, with nothing about you of dwarf or giant but just one thing, you walking dardsman, you much-married knave!
Wait, the other gave back shrilly.
Wait, you less than nothing, you atomy, you loss and lack, you worthless knocky! Away from this spot where doo-doo guards the honor of the house, or I will disgrace you with my manly weapon, wretch, and give you something to remember. What shame awaits you now if I go to Petitpré and tell him what goes on here in the dark, and what sort of words the steward whispers to the mistress in the curtained room? That you shall soon learn. You brought him into the house, the good-for-nothing, not resting from your little tittle-tattle before the departed Montcalm, boasting of your keen eye for goods and men and goods in men, till he bought the knave from the other knaves against my advice, and set him here in the house to dishonor the mistress and make a cuckold of Pharaoh's eunuch. You are to blame for the mess, you above all, and in the very beginning. You are due to the crocodile, and shall be served up to him as a tidbit and sweet meat, after they feed him your bosom friend when they have bound and beaten him.
Oh, oh, you foul mouth!
Railed the little one, trembling and writhing with rage.
You backbiter, whose words come not out of his understanding, but rise out of unknown depths, and are slavering obscenity! I dare you to touch me, or make any attempt to disgrace me else, though I am only a poor dwarf. You shall feel my nails in your face and the hollows of your eyes, for they are sharp, and to the pure weapons are given against the vicious. I, a little dwarf, guilty of the agony and affliction there within? Guilty is the evil thing, the all-devouring pestilence wherein you boast yourself a master, and have used it to the devilish ends of your hatred and envy to dig a pit for Osarsif, my friend. But see you not, you goat-dwarf, that you have failed, for no lack showed itself in my beautiful one. Since you listened, you must have heard that he was constant as a novice before the mysteries, and heroically defended his saga. What else have you heard at your crack, and what misheard, since your dwarf ear has lost all its cunning and sharpness, and become thick and stupid with playing the cock? I should like to know what you would or could tell the master of Osarsif, when your dull ears could have caught nothing important at your eavesdropping.
Oh-ho! Dudu cries out. The husband of Jesset can vie with you, weak wight, in sharpness of ear and hearing, when the matter is one he is at home in, while you, you chirruping lack-brain, have no understanding of it at all. Have you not heard the billing and cooing there within, and how the fine little pair were calling and prancing like birds when they mate? My ear is good for all that. It heard him call her dear child and little treasure, the slave, the mistress. But she said falcon and bull in the most honeyed tones. I heard them conniving how they would enjoy each other's flesh and blood. Do you not see that Dudu is not wanting as a witness? But the best thing I heard as I listened is that they made up in their heat to bring about Petitpré's death, to lay him low with a club.
You lie! You lie! For it is plain you have heard but the crassest nonsense at your post, and will tell Petitpré the sheerest lies about them both. For my youth called the mistress child and friend out of simple goodness and kindness to soothe her in her distraction, and honorably dissuaded her from her plan of felling even a puffball with a stick. Marvelously did he bear himself for his years, and as yet not the smallest blemish comes into his legend, despite all those sweet blandishments.
And so you think, Crablouse, that I could not accuse him just the same, and ruin him with the master? There is precisely the trick of it, and my trump card in this game, of which a puppet like you understands nothing at all. For it matters not a scrap how the fool behaves, more properly or more lustfully. The point is that the mistress is head over heels in love with him, and has no room for thought save how to bill and coo, and therein lies his ruin, from which nothing can save him. A slave about whom the mistress is crazy. He simply goes to the crocodiles, nothing else for him. And that is just the game. If he yields and makes love to her, I have him. But if he refuses, then he but pricks her madness. And it is even worse. He is for the crocodile either way, or at best for the knife, which will ruin his bill for cooing and cure the mistress of her fit.
"Oh, you monster! You blasphemer!" shrieked Shepsis Bess. "You are the best case in the world of what abomination can come and straddle about on this earth when one of the race of dwarfs loses his rightful goodness and fineness and tries to take on full-grown dignity. For such a one as a rascal like you, you renegade, you coney hunter, you—"
To which Dudu retorted that when the knife had been wielded, then Osarsif would be a better match for his emasculate friend. Thus the two pygmies expended themselves in mutual reviling, until the courtyard folk ran together. Then they parted, the one to report Joseph to the master, the other to seek his friend and warn him that he might still try by some means to escape from the pit.